Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Hold on. I'm going to start recording. And we're recording.
Very good.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I missed your text. You're going to laugh at me, but I was finishing up painting a clone trooper helmet. I was correct. You are going to laugh at me.
I mean, yeah, you are correct.
Yeah, actually, it's a full size one too. It's not just a 28 millimeter. It is a full fit on your head clone trooper helmet.
That's awful.
You know, I've never, with all my 3D printing and everything like that, I've never printed a full size prop before.
Well, now you have, and you wasted the first chance on a stormtrooper helmet.
Well, I mean, what else was I going to print? A space marine helmet?
You could have printed something cool. I don't know, a small replica of the Sulaco from Alien.
Your default is the Sulaco.
I mean, it's the one prop that would be the coolest thing to own.
Yeah, you think so?
I mean, I know so. Why, you tell me any other scale model that would be cooler to own.
Sorry about the beeping. That's my I'm adjusting the volume on my desktop speaker.
That's fine. They'll be beeping as I have to run and stir my pasta, and then I'll return.
Oh, I gotta stir my pasta. Hey, yes. Pasta for Zoom.
My Muscle Mac.
Oh, your Muscle Mac.
Yes, it's high protein macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, so I printed out a Stormtrooper helmet because I figured as long as I'm killing Fantasy Flight with my 3D printing, I might as well kill Lucasfilm with my prop printing as well.
I don't think they sell those, do they?
No, they don't. Well, they sell the toys. Like, you could buy a toy Clone Trooper helmet and paint it up, which I've seen people do, but they're not 3D print ones. So take that, Disney and Lucasfilm. I didn't buy your $60 toy helmet. Did we talk about that on the last podcast? I don't remember if we did.
No, we did not.
So the story behind that is that I printed out, 3D printed that Clone Trooper army that I know I talked about on the podcast, and I finished it up, and I was very proud of it. You know, you're proud of the stuff that you do. So I posted it on Instagram. Everyone was really positive there. So I went to Reddit, to the Star Wars Legion page on Reddit. Most people were relatively positive. However, there were two or three people who were oh my God, this is the death of the game. I was this game died before it even came out, you losers. But I think you said it best when we talked about ChinaCast, in that this was money that Fantasy Flight was never going to get from me in the first place. I was never going to buy anything with Star Wars Legion, just because I don't want to, and B, I don't think it's that great of a game where I'd want to invest any money in it, let alone the $300 that it would have cost to pay for what I essentially printed myself, And I was I can't. It's so short-sighted for people who are into miniature gaming not to see that any game besides Warhammer 40K will eventually die and go away. Am I correct in saying that?
I mean, yeah, if it's licensed, it's gone.
Yeah.
The thing, people underestimate, it doesn't matter how much that game sells. At some point, the license will become more expensive than the game's, the game would need to be a completely unique, it would be a unicorn. But actually, not even a unicorn. It would be like a buy something that doesn't exist, ever. That's never existed. Even the realms of fantasy.
The dreaded Esquilax?
Yes, it's the dreaded Esquilax, because no game has ever been able to maintain its profit margins versus licensing. Also, you also have there's the other half of that where, because it's licensing, the IP holder will take, because the IP holder doesn't make more money. Generally, they have a contract agreement that's not based on sales.
Yeah.
So if you have a smash hit game that's based on my IP, our licensing agreement is the same. It doesn't matter if you're smash hit or not. So in the case of, say, like, let's say Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball Z came at a had a very successful TCG under the manufacturer Panini. It was doing fine. Great sales. You know, there were no issues. The game was in no danger of dying. Suddenly, game immediately dies. Why? Licensing expired. What happened? Bandai produced a Dragon Ball TCG. So they literally just made a new TCG from another company, and that's as simple as that, because the license holder changes. So, like, when I make Fartman the Battlelore, and Joe, you're like, I'm going to license Fartman the Battlelore. And I'm like, sure, here's the Fartman the Battlelore licensing rights for, you know, 3 years. You make a extremely popular Fartman the Battlelore miniatures game, and Fantasy Flight comes along and they say, hey, we'll pay you double what Joe is paying for Fartman the Battlelore. And I'll be like, done. So then I don't renew your license. You lose Fartman the Battlelore. Game dies. I sell the license to Fantasy Flight, who now do the new Fartman the Battlelore. I don't care if that game's successful or not, because they're paying me triple what they offered you, or what you were paying me.
Well, it's not even that. It's there. So I know at least Disney or any company that's licensing their game is basically going to put it out for, you have this license for 3 to 5 years, right? It's usually about 5 years, I think, is how long a lot of those contracts go for. So I'm going to buy, you're going to have this game for 5 years. Okay. So at the end of that 5 years, you renegotiate your contract, correct?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So you renegotiate the contract. Then, so for example, like if Fantasy Flight's doing the X-Wing game, right? X-Wing is huge.
X-Wing.
Yeah. I believe they got the licensing right in 2011. So X-Wing comes around, is a huge success. By like 2016, X-Wing is like one of the top games in the world at that point, right? 2016-ish. Mm. So, okay. So Fantasy Flight re-ups the contract for another 5 years, 2011, or 2021. X-Wing might still be one of the more popular games out there, but you got to remember they hit that second edition wall. So they lost a ton of people.
Oh, it was bad. I don't think I've seen a worse second edition occur in a game ever.
Yeah. So
maybe, no, I was trying to think of maybe a miniatures game, but I was like, no way. There hasn't been a worse. No way.
Yeah, I don't think there's been I think it was only worse just because there was a shit ton of people playing it.
Yeah, let's just say, like, it was the largest edition switch that produced the most significant drop-off that I can think of any game.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, there are games that have had edition switches. I think Steve's going to get his muscle back, but I'm going to continue to talk anyway. There are games out there that were that have had edition changes and just killed the game, but they weren't big games to begin with. Those games were like Malifaux or Flames of War. Malifaux was the one that pretty much killed the game. Flames of War has had, like, I think, I want to say they're on the fourth edition now, but really they're just in the rules making game. They don't really, if you're really interested in their miniatures, I mean, you could buy them, but so many companies make 15 millimeter figures for World War II that it's kind of a moot at this point for them. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't really think of that many other games, but, you know, X-Wing was like a number one selling game. They switched over to a second edition, and then they just kind of, like, the player drop-off was pretty substantial. I don't think it's terrible, but it's pretty substantial.
Yeah, I also think it's not quite a direct comparison either, because it wasn't like Malifaux's player base was exploding in popularity at the time when they did
that. No, it wasn't. Yeah.
You know, X-Wing was by all... For all intents and purposes, X-Wing was the number one miniatures game, period. Like, it was outselling 40K. Like,
yeah, until, like, 2018, until, like, I believe 8th edition, and then 8th edition just was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was just huge, just in ridiculous demand, ridiculous sales, ridiculous player base, just exploding on all fronts. And then, you know, now it's, does it even exist anymore? Is it still around?
What?
The X-Wing miniatures game?
Yeah, it's still going. They're on their second edition. They're just, I was just looking up at the Gen Con, the virtual Gen Con schedule, and Fantasy Flight just previewed a bunch of new stuff for X-Wing. They're doing, what they did was they actually moved to Clone Wars. That's like their big, that's their big sale, is that they decided to, they are shifting their focus to more Clone Wars, which makes more sense, in my opinion, than original series for space combat. Well, I guess maybe not a space combat game, but it's just that the Clone Wars were actually a war instead of a terrorist action. So
it's true. It's true.
So it's actually a tabletop war game instead of a tabletop terrorist action game.
It's true. true. We have to put down these religious terrorists.
Exactly.
These religious fanatics must be put down.
So you're saying this young boy who is in the desert and taken in by this older religious fanatic is the hero of the story?
No, the real answer is there are no heroes.
No. I like how I say that. Like, that's an original thought, but I know like a billion comedians have come up with that.
Oh yeah.
That's
like the most used like trope about Star Wars.
Well, at this point,
the Empire are the good guys.
Post September 11th.
Yes. Yes.
Do you think there was ever a point where like George Lucas, like after September 11th went,
he was too busy going like, by the power of myth, no one will ever think that it's strange that none of the Jedi's bodies disappear in my prequel, nor will they think that Obi-Wan told Luke that he met Luke's father when he was a pilot. And basically all of the fucking shit I establish in my own movies that I contradict myself on in these prequels, but I need to make sure that I reinforce that I wrote all six of these stories already. There certainly is nothing that I just pulled right out of my ass, and definitely no racist aliens.
Your George Lucas is very high pitched. George Lucas kind of sounds like Kermit the Frog.
According
to the power of myth.
I don't want to disrespect Kermit like that.
Well, it's not Kermit the Frog. He just sounds a little bit like Kermit. He's got that.
They're kind of, you know, oh, my goiter.
my gigantic goiter.
I have an iodine deficiency.
He probably does. Just, you know, like George is just sitting there going like, just minding his own business. Then like September 12th comes along and goes,
you know what? I think I kind of fucked up here.
Is that Regal?
Is that Regal? Yeah. Right.
I'll be right back. I'm going to go mix my pasta. All right, I'm back.
Okay. While you were gone, I actually looked up ICV2's top-selling non-collectible miniatures games from this was actually from the fall.
Yes.
They put out the list in March. So top is Warhammer 40K, 2 is Age of Sigmar, 3 is Nolzers, 4 is actually Legion, and 5 is X-Wing.
Yes, and for people who don't who might not know the breadth of the difference in each of those tiers, the gap between 1 and 2 generally is not big. The gap between 2 and 3 is usually not huge, and then like past 3 you're talking huge gaps.
Well, yeah, and as we talked about before, it's like 40K is always going to be the perennial. It's always going to be on the list, and it was off the list just because of how awful 7th edition was.
And how hot X-Wing was.
Yeah, and how hot X-Wing. There was two things. Two is Age of Sigmar, which is crazy because I believe even when it was fantasy was like 5, if even
in fantasy never came close. Yeah. Fantasy never came close to number 2.
Yeah.
Like, let alone any higher than that. They never came close to that. So it's a massive achievement.
And Nolzers is just, it'll put in perspective how well 40K sells, because Nolzers is literally everywhere. You could buy Nolzers miniatures in any tabletop store, any board game store. I think they sell them in Target. Like, they are literally everywhere. And so for that to be number 3, when an X-Wing is number 1 and 40K is number 1, it goes to show you how much that 40K actually sells.
Oh, yeah. It's that there's also somewhat of a misleading bit on there, I would imagine. It sold more dollar value, but I would be willing to bet that unit-wise and reach-wise, Nolzers is number 1.
Yeah,
because you got to remember, Nolzers is competing at third place against a game where the average buy for an item is more than $25. Like,
yeah.
What's the average price of a workshop item? $35? Like,
I would say, if that's on the low end average at this point. I don't think I could name anything that 40K and that sells, that Games Workshop sells, aside from like packs of dice that are, and even then those are like $15, but anything that's less than $25.
Okay, so then let's say we'll go with an average of $32. We'll just go with that because that's their free delivery minimum for their website.
Oh, good call.
So I will go with an average of $32. So your average single purchase item for Games Workshop is $32. your average purchase of a Knowlzer's figure is $5. And that's if you're not getting one at a discount.
Yeah.
So when thinking about the volume of sales for a game that's selling the average SKU at $5 to get in third place against a game that's average SKU is, you know, more than five times or six times higher than the average purchase, that's massive.
Yeah. So I was also looking at the Fantasy Flight history. In 2008, they got the workshop license, right? And then that fell, and then that got canceled in 2017. So that's about 10 years. So I bet you it's about a 5-year contracts that they generally sell. So I guarantee you there's something like a right around there, like with their contract time. So
yeah, maybe I know Workshop very specifically jumped ship with Fantasy Flight when they cut their distributors as well, when they went straight to Asmodee.
Oh, really? So that's, you know, that could be it too. So that might be a little bit different. But yeah, it's fucking Star Wars.
Yeah. It's Star Wars. I only play Star Wars games.
So to give you a quick roundup on Fantasy Flight for Gen Con, the Electric Gen Con, as I like to call it.
The Electric Gen Con.
That actually sounds way more fun than regular Gen Con. It sounds like it's a 70s stage musical is what it sounds like. The Electric Gen Con. That would be a fantastic... I'm going to write that musical. Yeah, it's all about like going to Gen Con. And it's a lot of singing, a lot of dancing. A lot of heavy breathing, and a lot of backpacks that take up the entire space.
I like it. And then the Freedom Scooters.
We'll have a whole Freedom Scooter like tap line.
I like it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that just be like a choreographed dance? How are they going to tap?
Well, you can still tap while on the seat.
Oh, tap, but it's the little horns instead.
Well, no, that's more percussion, like stomp. A tap has actually got tap shoes on, my friend.
They're not gonna do that. We would need to do something else. You're not gonna get that many people in scooters, in Freedom Scooters to tap. Come on,
We're not gonna get like real people. This isn't gonna be like some sort of weird Stephen Sondheim experiment. We're gonna have professional dancers up there doing tap dancing while sitting down. You could do it.
Oh yeah, I guess. I feel that's disingenuous though.
Well,
or you know what? Actually, I got a good one. You have them go tap, 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 and then like they all kind of stop, and they do like a choreographed like kind of like Mongolian throat singing thing, except it's just heavy breathing, and then they do tap, 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 and then the heavy breathing.
Well, no, they pull out their oxygen masks.
That's the only kind of mask I'm gonna wear.
Wear my oxygen mask. They light up a cigarette. So the Electric Gen Con, they're previewing the Anakin model that's coming out for Star Wars Legion. You know, the protagonist of the entire series who was like released 5 months after the core pack.
The protagonist.
It's about maybe like a year at this point after the core pack comes out. Yeah, the protagonist. He's coming out, and some other droid thing, I think it's from the cartoons, is coming out. And they're doing a bunch of the packs.
The Clone Wars toy stuff.
Yeah, or the Clone Wars cartoon series.
Banana-kin. sandwiches have bread. Anakin. Pop-Tart is also a sandwich.
You fucking love that. I don't.
It's one of my favorites. I don't know. I think it's because I have just a deep love of the like food argument memes. Like in general, like what's a pizza? What's a sandwich?
So like a hot dog is a taco?
Right. Yeah. Like what's a taco? What's a burrito? Like that, like the kind of like, what is it? I guess it's like a Play-Doh level of.
Yeah. That's what I always say. My thing is that pizza is undefinable. Like you can't actually define what a pizza is.
Like a pizza, like a calzone is a pizza.
Well, a calzone is obviously not a pizza, but I mean, like, no, it's like, it's that Diogenes, like, how do we break this down? Or I think it's Aristotle who did, like, how do we break it down into, like, its basest forms? Like, a pizza is literally undefinable. Like, you could say, like, okay, it's flat. Okay, good. Because all pizza is technically flat. And then you say
What about a pizza roll? That's not flat.
Well, the pizza roll is not a pizza, though.
But it says pizza.
We're not going to try and come something that's gonna, nothing's going to encompass everything, but it's like you go down and it's like, okay, so you say a pizza is flat. Okay, good. Well, that's a good starting point. A pizza is a flat food thing. Okay, good. That is made of, or it has to incorporate dough. Okay. And a sauce. Okay. The sauce does not have to be tomato based, but it has to be a sauce. Okay. So like, then you go and you do the opposite where you go, it's like, well, is a Ritz cracker with ketchup on it technically a pizza? Right. You're like, fuck.
So, and then also there's a stuffed deep dish pizza. That's like, it's like a covered pizza, but yeah, it's still like a giant pizza. And that's also definitely not flat. It's got like, it's like 3 inches tall. So like, that's not flat.
So yeah, like a deep dish pizza is technically a casserole. I mean, yeah. I'm from Chicago. I love deep dish, but it's definitely a casserole. It's delicious casserole, but it's a casserole.
What about the covered one? Have you seen that? I saw that.
It's not a pizza. That's a fucking pie.
I mean, but then we come back to people call it a pizza pie.
Well, yeah. Well, those people are idiots.
I mean, I feel that the only legitimate pizza has no tomato sauce on it. It's a margarita pizza. That's the only. That's the only thing I recognize.
Margarita pizza.
That is the only thing.
Flatbread, Steve. It's flatbread.
Only thing I recognize as a pizza.
the United Nations of Steve refuses to acknowledge anything other than margarita pizza.
Yes, anything other than the classic margarita pizza. And I'm talking the classic, so they can't have tomato sauce on it either. It's got to be mozzarella, olive oil, basil leaves, and tomato slices.
Yeah, that's
it's got to be the chunks of mozzarella too. It can't be shredded mozz either.
I'm going to disagree with you and say that that's a flatbread. But you know what? This is the wars have been started on less.
That's it. And the United Nations of Steve go to war with the United Nations of Joe. That's just where it is.
You're slamming your shoe on the table like that's not pizza.
Yeah. I'm already on my BlackBerry texting my agents to start assassinating your top leaders.
Assassinating the top leaders.
Yeah. And they'll leave a fresh margarita pizza on the corpse.
But we have to do this with Warhammer rules. So you have to tell me there's an assassin, but you can't tell me what unit the assassin's in.
That's right. There's six assassins, but that's it. You've been alerted. There's six assassins.
You can't use six assassins. You only have four hero slots.
No, see, I took this additional slot choice, which gives me two extra bonus choices of assassins, which I've elected to use in this war.
I don't know what edition you're using. Also, Fantasy Flights announced an expansion, or is it a different game? Prophecy of Kings expansion for Twilight Imperium. I guess it's an expansion actually for Twilight Imperium. It looks like there's some bunch of new factions that are going to be brought in, a bunch of planets and stuff like that. It just looks like a way to extend Twilight Imperium.
All I can say is that the only thing you need if you're playing Twilight Imperium, all you need is the base game.
If you're playing Twilight Imperium, all you need is friends.
You need two, I think, what is it? Is it six players, eight players?
You could have, I think it's six to eight or something like that.
Oh, all right. So you need at least two plus friends. You need at least two plus friends to play Twilight Imperium.
Yeah.
Twilight Imperium is only a game that's long if you're in the situation. Like, that's the thing about Twilight Imperium. That's kind of, I don't want to say silly, but it's like, Twilight Imperium is known as like a super long game. When in reality, it's like if everyone knows how to play, you can easily bang out a full game of full players with like in like 4 to 5 hours. Like very
yeah, that's and that's still pretty long if you're playing.
It's a long game. The difference is, and the reason it's known as a legendary long game is it's extremely difficult to learn as you play.
Yeah.
And very frequently people's first experience playing Twilight Imperium is like four friends get together and they're like, we're going to learn how to play Twilight Imperium together. And that's like that's the worst idea.
Yeah.
like learning to play a simple board game with people like that is generally a bad idea. Learning to play one that's like arguably like the most complex Western game out there. Like that's not very specialized, because I'm sure there's Food Chain Magnate? I hear that game's like incredibly complex. But like also fucking the subject matter is the most fucking boring thing in the universe.
What, space politics or food chain?
Food Chain.
Oh.
Yeah, Food Chain Magnet is just like, it's one of those games where it's like, the box is like a fucking ass ton of cards, a bunch of wooden pieces, and then just like notepads.
Notepads. Yeah, that sounds boring as fuck.
Yeah, it's a shame because like the subject matter is, you know, boring and shitty. But like in terms of like competitive gameplay, it's apparently one of the best board games out there. Like it's like there is no like, the variance is incredibly small, and like if everyone knows how to play food, we're talking again about Food Chain Magnate. But it's if everyone knows how to play Food Chain Magnate, it's incredibly difficult to win with luck. Unlike most board games, where like you know someone just shits in your throat with some six rolls, and they're like, cool. And you're like, nice, my strategy did not matter because you rolled a fuck ton of sixes.
My recent board gaming has involved a kitty matching game, which has been pretty fun. Not kitty as in K-I-D-D-Y, but no, kitty as in cats. Kitty cats. Yes.
Yeah, cats.
That's great. It's a game where you have cute pets and you have to match them up on the floor. It's actually kind of a complicated game. I'm not joking. Like, it's like you get, when you have to put down tiles next to matching tiles. And every matching tile that it's next to, you get a point for. But then each tile is a different color. And so at the end of the game, you count up the rows of the same colors and you get bonus points based off that. So it's okay. Like, it's a really like fun game that's quick. But it's I can't remember. I wish I had the name for it off the top of my head, but I don't. It's over in my closet. And I don't feel like getting up to go get it.
That's one of the reasons I really like Dune.
Dune.
Yeah, yeah. And or Arena Rex, whatever you wanna call called. It's the same game, just you know, different skin. Although the newest one has had a lot of rules cleanup. But Dune is a good mix of big strategy, and then it has not necessarily luck. Like there's no dice rolls, so like combat in that game, you can guarantee I think a draw in a combat in that game, because like because there's a maximum amount of troops you can commit. I believe it's been a while, so I might be wrong, but if I remember correctly, there's a maximum amount of troops you can commit to a fight, and that's hidden information.
Oh, but you meant Rex Imperium. You said Arena Rex, and I got
confused. Did I say Arena Rex? Yes. Yeah. I meant Imperium Rex or whatever.
Yeah.
Imperial Rex, whatever. Yes. The one that's based on Twilight Imperium rules, but it's a reskinned Dune.
Yeah, it's the Dune rules with a Twilight Imperium skin. Yeah,
so the combat in that game is like the maximum you can put out is 10 troops. And like when we're in a fight, I know that the max you can put in is 10 troops. You know that the max I can put in is 10 troops. So then the game becomes, what are we going to gamble? And I know that if I commit 10, the worst outcome is a draw. Because if you also committed 10, you know, we have a draw. So like that's the kind of combat that I like, where it's like it's player input intensive, but there is still a bit of like uncertainty, because you know it's bluffing, which I enjoy. It's much better than, you know, a game where it's just like I move my three troops here, I roll three sixes, you've lost. I prefer that. Is it so is your game Cat Rescue by any chance? Is that what it's called?
I don't think so. It's like it's something pets, because there's also puppies.
I see.
There are rabbits and gerbils.
Ooh.
Or they might be hamsters.
Hamsters? Hamsters are fucking cute.
Yeah, I'm not 100% positive on the gerbil to hamster ratio. It could be both for all I know.
Well, if they're small and bean-shaped and don't have long hair, they're most likely hamsters.
Okay.
And then if they're small, bean-shaped with long hair and kind of long tails, they're gerbils.
Ah, okay. Yes.
So there you go. That is the most significant difference between a hamster and a gerbil is that a gerbil has a long tail.
There you go, folks. You've learned something today.
A hamster just has a little stubby tail, kind of like a bulldog. Very cute.
Yes. So apparently, getting back, Fantasy Flight has decided to do a expansion. I think it's just like, have you played Twilight Imperium so much that you're tired of it? I don't think that would count for any single person in the United States. Yes. I wanted to stay away from 40K because we've been going pretty heavy, but I did want to mention about how much Games Workshop shat the bed with their new app.
Oh, is it bad? I didn't download it.
From what I'm hearing, like the initial release was pretty janky. No, you're not going to get it. You know why, Steve? It costs $5 a month.
I thought it was free.
To get the so the Age of Sigmar one, 99 cents a month. I don't even care at that point because that's, you know, that's nothing. I can use that. I can look up rules. I can look up, I make my armies and everything like that. To do the same exact thing in 40K, $5.
Oh no. You know what? So yeah, it is a lot more money, but it is not the exact same thing.
No.
If you pay the $5 for 40K, you get everything.
Yeah.
No. You get everything. With Age of Sigmar, you do not get any books. Even if you pay for the service, you get no books unless you buy the book digitally. With the 40K one, if you pay the $5 a month, you have access, full access to all the codexes, which is, I mean, is it worth, you know, five times the price? That's up to you. Probably, because it's 40K, so, you know, people pay more. Yeah. But you do functionally get more if you pay the $5 than you for the Age of Sigmar.
I know, but I mean, what would you get in the books that you couldn't get? Like, that's what I'm thinking right now. It's like with the Age of Sigmar one, it doesn't give me all the books, but I have access to all the rules.
So what you would do if you wanted to be optimal with the 40K one is you would buy the digital book for what you want on the 40K one and then use the app for free. Because the free app has all of the base rules and like the unit cards and that stuff for free.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So does Age of Sigmar. So I'm wondering, you say, yeah, yes, I get access to all of the books, but technically with Age of Sigmar, except for the fluff, that's the only thing I'm not getting access to.
Yeah, like, and you don't have access to the codexes or the battalions.
Well, okay, the battalions I'll give you. You can still add them into army lists if you know what the battalions do.
Right.
If you have the battalion rules, which is not hard to get, but besides the point, you get all the war scrolls. So that's like essentially all a Warhammer Age of Sigmar army book is you get war scrolls, and yeah, you get them for battalions too. So the only thing you're really losing is fluff.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying it's too worth it, but hey, let's see what here. The army builder is what you get when you pay for it. That's the thing that you do not get. The army builder is not free with either version of the game.
Okay.
Like Age of Sigmar, army builder is not free.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But with the army builder, like that's all I'm technically getting with the Azure app is I'm just getting, I get access to all of the cards, but I could do that already through the app for free, but I get the army builder. So I pay $1 for an army builder. For 40K, it's kind of the same thing. Like,
yeah, it's you're paying more because you're getting the army builder and every codex. So that's the question. Do you feel having instant access to every codex is worth $5 a month? That's the difference.
No, and that's the thing. It's like the Azure one, access to every an army builder and access to all the codex for $1. And it's like you're paying five times the amount for 40K.
You don't have access to the codexes with Azure for $1. You have to buy the codexes. There is no free.
No, I think I'm going around in circles here, Steve. You're missing my point on this. Is that there is nothing in the army books that you would want outside of like maybe the battalions, but that's it.
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't know enough about what's in 40K codexes to make that assertion, because I don't know what because I know 40K has like formations and they have stratagems and there's like a bunch of different stuff in 40K books. So yeah. I'm not saying I'm gonna hop right out and buy this 40K or pay $5 a month for this 40K thing, but I will say it does seem okay. So you actually get a code in 40K physical books now. So here's a legit, this is not subscriber based. This is just what the app does that is literally better is the 40K codexes come with a code. You can put that code into the app and it gives you that book in the app.
Okay.
So with Age of Sigmar, you buy a discounted price, but you still must buy the book, even if you've bought a physical book.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, which is kind of bullshit, but
so there's that. In reality, I think if we were to give a direct, like if I were to compete these services against one another directly. Also, I think Acer is actually $2 a month.
No, it's only 99 cents. At least maybe the price I'm locked in at is 99 cents, but.
I have to look now because it
might be 99.99 pence.
Because this says it's 3.99 Okay, so this is 3.99 pounds. So we'll go with that because 0.99 pence would probably work out to be about $1, about $2 of.
Not at this exchange rate. I think it's only $1.40 at this point. $1.30
They're not gonna update that.
Well, yeah.
They're just gonna be like, yeah, this is the exchange rate when we came up with the price. So I would say if I were to go direct head to head and say what is this doing versus this, I would say that a fair price for what you get on top of what Acer offers would probably be $3 a month.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
That is where I would sit. If I were directly to go, what does this app have yeah. over the app that's already about $2 a month? What does this have that's better? And I'd say it's about $1 more. Like, it's probably about worth $1 more.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that. Like, if they wanted to charge 1.99 pounds for it instead. And it's $1.30, by the way.
Now, optimally, I'd like them to do a double app where you get both apps fully complete for $4 a month.
That'd be nice to do a combo. I think they could actually make some money off that.
They could. I mean, that's something I would probably buy. Like, I would probably I would not add an additional $5 to my $1.50 or whatever right now. I would not do that. But so it would be, you know, almost $7. But I might go to just $4 total to get full access to both. That might be worth it.
Yeah, it could be.
And I think that I don't think that I'm in the minority there because I actually have no idea what the crossover is between Age of Sigmar and 40K. Because back in the day of yonder, there was very, very little crossover for 6th edition fantasy and 40K. Like, very little. I think the average fantasy tournament I went to, like, I'm thinking of all, like, all the players, there would be, let's see if there were 40 there. I think we used to average, like, at the bigger tournaments, there were like about 40 players. I knew just about everyone. And I think, maybe not counting myself, there were 4 guys I knew who actively played both games, because there were always guys who had armies for both. Like, there was a dude who, like, he had a like 10,000 point Necron army. And I don't think I ever saw him play a game of 40K, but I saw him at every fantasy tournament. So I think there was a good chunk of those guys, but not counting those guys who actively played, was less than 10% of the player base easily, maybe 5%.
Yeah, I mean, it's very true. You're not going to be able, there's not a ton of crossover, I think, at this point. I think a lot of the crossover that exists are...
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I wonder if there's more.
I think that there is some. I want to say Age of Sigmar, because of the ease of entry for it, has brought a bunch more people into it. And I think a lot of those people probably played 40K. And so I think people are like, ooh, I really like this IP. And then, ooh, I really like this IP. And it's like, I can get them both at the same place and spend thousands of dollars. Sure, why the fuck not?
Yeah.
You're not like us where we're like, I've already had 16 40K armies at this point. I'm not buying another one.
Or like me, and I'm just like, I have like at least a 6,000 point demon army for 40K. I don't really think I want to buy another army for 40K.
You know, it just disappoints me a little bit, Steve. And I'm going to explain why it disappoints me. Because I want to see you do something else other than Nurgle. I've never seen you do a fantasy or 40K army outside of Nurgle. You may have at some point, but I've never seen it.
You didn't see my Orc and Goblin army? Damn.
I did the
olive skin tone and everything.
For fantasy or
yeah,
for
fantasy.
Warmaster?
For fantasy.
No, I never saw those.
Damn. That was my seventh ed army. That was my huge, gigantic seventh edition army that I started playing, and then I played in one tournament, and I was like, oh my god, this army is fucking terrible. And then I played in a follow-up tournament where I played against when the High Elf Codex was brand, or High Elf Army Book was brand new. I front charged a High Elf Spearman unit with Grimgor Ironhide in a unit of Black Orcs. I flank charged it with a unit of Wolf Riders and flank charged it with a unit of Boar Boys. So front charge, full block, untouched of Black Orcs with Grimgor, and then flank charged with the cavalry units as I described. I lost the combat, my unit of Black Orcs broke and was run down by a unit of regular ass High Elf Spearmen.
Yeah.
So that after I sold my army at that tournament, I went over to one of the guys I knew who was like basically a whale, and I was like, hey man, you want to buy my Orc and Goblin army? I sold my army to this dude before I left the tournament, and I never touched Orcs and Goblins again.
As I'm sitting here with a beautifully painted Orc and Goblin army that I'm currently working on, you could go to my Instagram page and see that one. Yeah, so getting back, it's like with GW doing this, it's like $5. That's just such a – and they were like, it's less than the cost of a paintbrush a month. And we're like, how many paintbrushes do people go through?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
like, I don't think
I use those things until they're obliterated.
Yeah.
Because I can't be the only one, but like when my paintbrush gets to the point where it's like not great for points anymore, it goes into this is now a dry brush or a wash brush. Like it just becomes a brush that I don't need it to be accurate. So, yeah. I mean, that's what I usually do. Like the only time I actually toss a brush is when they're really fucking obliterated. Cause even the ones that are like super splayed or like really fucked up, those are good for putting like blood splatter, like stick a really splayed brush into some blood for the blood god and just kind of like, you know, waggle it on a shield or a sword. And it looks cool because the bristles are all fucked up. So it gives it a really good spray effect.
Yeah, I've actually spent like I have like three really nice brushes that I've spent like about, let's say about $20 on a piece. And I've used those for about 3 years now and I've never had an issue with them. It's just one of those like quality over quantity things.
Yeah. I mean, that and the other thing too is if you're buying cheap brushes, you're buying fucking like 20 brush packs for $5.
Ugh.
Hey, don't underestimate those. They're fantastic for just like quick and dirty speed paint jobs.
No, they're not.
Oh, they're great.
It's miserable. It's like when you're painting with one of those, it's just like, ugh, it feels so bad in your hands and you're constantly trying to fix stuff.
You gotta use one of the I will say it's not a universal rule. You have to find one of the better cheapo brands that's good for paint plans that are gonna destroy your fucking brushes. That's the idea.
Maybe. I don't know. Did you see the so we talked about Malfo earlier at Gen Con this year. They released for Gen Con this year, they're selling like a special 1988 edition of like the game. Like,
no.
Yeah, it's very 80s. Like an 80s feel. I don't know if it's like an 80s feel gang or something like that, or whatever it is. I looked at it. I was like, ah, that's something. That's a thing. Way to go, Weird Games.
All right then.
Yeah. The other question is, are you going to get the Contra board game?
No, I am not.
No, you're not going to get the Contra board game?
No, come on.
Do you think anybody will? It leads me to a question about that. Is do they make these board games because, like, for people to actually play, or just have because they like Contra?
Well, the thing that's funny about that is that there actually already was a board game called Contra, and it was a chess esque game.
Oh.
So I thought I don't know. I mean, obviously it's a totally
This is
a totally different thing.
Yeah.
But no, like, why the fuck would anyone want that? Like,
someone who, like, I see it as being like a lazy thing for like, oh man, you know, Pat really likes Contra, so I'm gonna get him this board game. He's never gonna play it, but it looks like the old Nintendo cartridge. It's got kind of that.
Something that lives on a shelf. I could see that.
Yeah, it's got a lot of components that are kind of like bad. So yeah. I could see
living on a shelf. That makes sense to me. That's definitely a place that game might exist, or where it's just like
And in 3 years, Pat's like, you know, he's like, you know, I never played this Contra game, and then he gets his kids to sit down to try and play it, and he's like, these rules are incomprehensible. Back on the shelf it goes.
It is only $50, so I mean that's pretty good.
I
don't know. I cannot. There's just I don't know that's an that one is so out of the out of like left field. It's just like, who, like, I don't know. There's just no. You know what those guys would work for? You know what contra the board game would work as?
What?
Fucking Zombicide expansion.
Ooh, that would be kind of cool, wouldn't it?
You just get the Contra guys, the like licensed Contra guys, and you just fucking get their look, you get their special cards, and you use them in Zombicide. Like, that is what characters like that would exist perfectly for, because like Contra the game is a 2D side-scrolling action game. Like, that is not really...
Not Contra 3.
Wait, is that Super Contra?
Yes, Super Contra. Sorry. Yeah,
Super Contra does have well, I guess it is. No, well, I think it might actually be called Contra 3, now that I think about it. Well, the Contra that's on Super Nintendo.
Yes.
But yes, that has side scrolling, and then it has those weird top down stages as well. but the original Contra had those from behind stages too.
I guess it did. So your whole thing just goes right out the window.
But it's still an action game with no RPG elements whatsoever. Yeah. So like, a board game doesn't really, like, there's no strategy in Contra. It's you know, it's fucking jump around, avoid bullets. Like, how are you gonna get the game feel of a high octane game like Contra? Like, I'm not saying there's no strategy. Obviously, there's a strategy. Every fucking game has strategy. But like, you're not doing like long. It's not like strategy in like Final Fantasy Tactics has strategy. You know, Contra's more. What is it? What's the difference? Strategy versus tactics, maybe that's what it is. Or is strategy the plan and tactics is the implementation of the plan? Is that what the difference is?
You're all kind of mumbling. It's all mumbling together with me at this point.
I know there's a specific different, like, it was in goddamn Code Geass. The fucking they go on, like, there's like a fucking Shakespearean level fucking dialogue between two characters about the difference between strategy and tactics. I can't remember. But anyway, but like with Contra, like, the, you know, the game's speedy and fast. So like a board game is not what I would like. I could see a dice game. You know how you could transfer Contra to tabletop? Is it would be like, you have a card that's your character, there's a deck of aliens, you flip up an alien, you have to decide how many dice you want to allocate because you're trying to look for numbers, kind of like a Yahtzee variant, like a fast thinking game where you're like, you have to like make quick calls to like beat the enemy. That is a game that's how I would transfer Contra. Like, not a fucking slow ass board game where you're like, I'm gonna move three spaces here.
Yeah, it's probably just some bullshit they got the license for to put out something really quick and make a couple bucks off of.
Oh yeah, Konami's going crazy with what they're letting people license out, so it makes sense.
Yeah. One other company we haven't talked about in a long time though, Privateer Press really put out a lot of stuff about Warcaster, Neo Mechanica. Oh yes,
the game where everyone looks the same.
And I know that they're doing a panel or something on it at Gen Con. It just makes me laugh because it's like the minis aren't bad. They look like what's it called? What's that game? Why can't I think of it?
Infinity.
Yeah, they all look like Infinity shit. Yeah,
they look like Infinity by way of Privateer Press sculptors, no question.
Yeah. And it looks like, now I might not be aware of like the minutia of the details, but it looks like it plays just like War Machine Hordes.
It doesn't, but it's very similar.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, but that's what I'm saying is like, at least looking at it wise is like, this all looks very, very familiar to me. I haven't played in War Machine Hordes in a long time, so I might be completely off base, but yeah, it looks a lot like War Machine. I think the Warcaster is not on the table or something like that.
There's a pretty big difference. It's been so long, so I actually might be wrong, but if I remember correctly, War Machine in combat was, you would look at your attack stat versus the opponent's defense value, and you'd be looking for a target number. So like, I would roll, you know, a certain number, I would roll my two dice or boost it for three dice, and I'd be looking for a static number based on your defense.
Yeah.
This one's a dice off. So you have a defensive role versus an attacking role.
Okay.
So like, that's a big difference, because that adds a lot of variance when you're talking about a game. Like, that adds a lot of variance, putting something that's a static number, like an RNG versus a static number. Now it's RNG versus RNG.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I think I could see that mechanic wise being a also, big difference. Yeah,
you can't be tabled.
Oh, you can't be tabled.
When anything dies, it can respawn.
Ooh, that now see now that's interesting to me.
Yeah, because the idea is that you're fighting with teleporting troops, like everyone's teleporting to the battlefield. So when your troops die, you can redeploy them onto the battlefield somewhere.
Now we're talking my language.
Yeah, and I think that's you have your casting points, and I think you can choose instead of spending your casting points on casting stuff or using stuff for your casting points, you spend it to bring dudes back. And they deploy units like you basically like deep strike. So
that's deep strike?
That's a thing. Also, the dice are not normal dice. It has gimmick dice. I know you're excited.
Oh, I love gimmick dice. You know me.
Yeah. So you have white dice or red dice, and the white dice have a bunch of blanks and a couple successful hits, and then the red dice have almost no blanks and many successful hits. So that's how the dice work. So you roll. You're rolling six-sided dice, but they are not six-sided. If that makes sense, they all not all of the sides have results.
I'm just thinking about this, like Jesus fucking Christ. Another thing you got to keep. At least it's just red dice. Red dice, white dice. It's not like it's.
Yes, and from what I understand, the white dice are the dice. The white dice are the dice you roll for all the rolls, and when you add a boost or a bonus, then you use the red dice.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's not terrible. It's like the type of dice I hate are where it's like if you lose this one dice, the game is unplayable. Like you have to go buy another copy. You have to go buy another dice of that exact special thing in order to make the game playable, which Fantasy Flight is probably the most egregious when it comes to that.
They were the kings when they still made lots of games.
Yeah, I mean,
now I don't think they really make many games.
Well, all of their Star Wars games run off the same dice system, the same dice. So you could, when you buy that pack of dice, like that's good for most of the game systems, but it's still just like obnoxious that it even exists that way.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's to just get an extra point of sale.
Yeah. Which is bullshit in my opinion, but whatever.
Yes. That's hot garbo. I'm my personal favorite, and I will stan any game that does specific special dice that are just variants of regular dice. So like if my game is D8s and I produce special cool ass dice that are half blank and then have three like success symbols and then one like critical skull, that I think is cool. Because when I'm writing the rules, I can say you can just use regular dice. 1 through 4s are nothing. 5, 6, 7 are success. 8 is critical success.
Yeah.
So like that I like. I'm a big fan of those because I like the gimmick dice. They're cool. I prefer if they have a some sort of root in dice existence, like in regular dice. Because you know, most people who play tabletop games have a fuck ton of D&D dice. So
yeah,
like there's some exceptions. I'm also super okay with specialty dice if the dice are all the same size. That's another thing that's I feel is critical, which Fantasy Flight is the ultimate sinners of. They do a bunch of specialty dice that are always different sides. They always have like this game uses the full D20 range and every dice is special. And it's like, oh my God. Like if they're all D12s or something and like every D12, like every dice is a D12 side, but they're special. I'm much more okay with that than I am with like, this game has D4s, D6s, D8s, D10s, D12s, and all of them are variant special dice.
Yeah.
Warhammer Fantasy 3rd Edition was the most brutal with that.
Yeah, I agree. One last thing I wanted to talk about, we're getting close to the end here. Did you see the new Curse of Strahd revamp they're putting out?
I did. The mega collection. It's in a giant coffin. It's pretty cool.
It's fucking ridiculous. let me see if I can... it's not going to be available till October. I wanted to look up the box set. There's two sets. There's two versions of this that are coming out, by the way. I didn't know if you knew this. There is a $100 one, which I think you can get for like... I see it's on $60 on Amazon. That's the one that comes in the coffin.
Yes.
With all of like... It's very 5th edition looking.
Yes.
With all of its designs and everything like that. Very cool. I love Curse of Strahd. I think it's a iconic campaign. but they're also Beetle and Bard. Is it Beetle and Bard? Hold on a second. Beetle and Grimm are doing a legendary edition of Curse of Strahd for $360.
Jesus.
Yes. I did not see too much of the what the components look like. But apparently it actually has physical written letters in it. It has props in it, like jewelry and coins and all that fun, like, and handmade maps. Like, it's like a real, like, super fancy schmancy edition.
Jesus. Although it pales in comparison to the Rime of the Frost Maiden premium edition.
Rime of the Frost. Yeah,
That's the Icewind Dale one. The Rime of the Frost Maiden premium edition.
Yeah.
$500.
Well, actually, it says, I think in this article I was reading, that there is I'm looking at the Icewind Dale one.
Yeah,
yeah, $500. Yeah. The
Platinum edition. $500.
You know, I would suppose if it's like, here's the thing. Like, I've always wanted to do this. It's never going to happen for me, but I would love to do, like, have a group of do D&D where we meet, you know, once every 2 weeks or something like that, and we legitimately run through one of the classic campaigns. Mm. Like, you know, we have the DM who's like, okay, we're dedicated. We're going to do Rime of the Frost Maiden. That's not a classic one, but we're going to do Curse of Strahd. We're all going to sit down. We're going to play through this. And then we just play through Curse of Strahd. And it's like, we could use all of that stuff that's in there. Like, if you could do that, like, it's much more memorable. But most of the people who are going to buy this are just people who are literally never going to open it because they're never going to play Icewind Dale.
It's going on their shelf right next to the Contra board game.
Right next to the Contra board game. Exactly. Like, it's ridiculous. Also, this is only limited to 1,000 units, Steve.
That is a lot of $500 box sets.
Yeah. So that's like, what, $50,000 total? Right? Did I do the math right on that one?
Yes.
Okay, so $50,000. That's not a bad get, I suppose.
Wait, no, how many? It said
1,000 copies. Yeah.
That's 500,000. That's half a million bucks.
Yeah. I mean, you get a lot in there, so I don't know. Maybe the cost versus price is rather thinner than we imagine. I don't know. But they're doing that.
Probably, well, this is direct manufacturing. I need to see who's making it to see what this Beetle. I don't know what Beetle and Grimm.
Actually, if you do go to their site, they make some pretty cool like D&D shit, like props and stuff like that.
Oh, I'm sure it's worth the money. Yeah. I just don't know anyone who could justify that amount of money for a fucking D&D campaign.
I mean, nerds who have money. Like, there's a really cool Baldur's Gate pin that I kind of want to buy if it's, you know, depending on the size of it, but they don't really tell you the size. But it's just a really cool looking pin. It's for Baldur's Gate. You could get an Eberron shirt, Steve, an Eberron shirt.
I'll pass on that, but I want to show off my allegiance to the greatest city in the Sword Coast.
See? All right. I think that's about it of everything I wanted to talk about, aside from arguing again about the existence of unidentified aerial objects.
Yes.
I think they call them unidentified aerial vehicles at this point. That's what the official definition of UFOs are. They don't call them UFOs because of the connotation with aliens. So the U.S. government calls them unidentified aerial vehicles.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
AEVs or UAEVs.
Which is funny because by calling it a vehicle, that means that there's probably something inside. Like, that's weird. I think object is better because if you don't know if it's a vehicle or not, then why can you call it a vehicle?
Right. And also, like, what do you classify, or does that mean you'd classify a missile as a vehicle? Like, technically, I guess there's nothing piloting it, but like, it's carrying something.
Yeah, whatever. UFOs, man, they're real.
Sure. I mean, yes, they're real. They're just not extraterrestrial.
Yeah. They're just not extraterrestrial, man.
There's not. There's just no way. It just doesn't make it. But the amount, the probability of it is just so infinitesimally low.
I was
the only, exception being is if we're in a simulation.
Well, that's true too. I was actually my big thing that I was thinking about was is that all right? So the U.S. government has acknowledged that there are unidentified aerial vehicles that are flying around, right? What if, and that makes you think of like, what other country in the world would have the capability of creating these things that are so, you know, advanced? It's definitely probably not Russia or China or North Korea, like the three countries that would keep that secret from us. But it's like,
I think any country making something like that would keep it secret from everyone.
I know, but I mean, what country would have that capability? The UK puts beans on toast, Steve.
Well, I don't think Turf Island would have anything to do with it, but like,
Island.
You'd have like, that could easily be something that like someone in the EU could do, or like someone out of left field, like
not the peaceful Germans, Steve,
like Denmark. Yeah. Peaceful Germans. I think you should, take a look at some of the more recent news coming out of Germany and reevaluate yourself.
Not the peaceful Germans or the lazy French. I would make a UFO, except
they're rioting it. they were going to make the UFO, but they decided to riot instead.
Yeah, technically they overthrew the government, cut off the guy's head, and then just started a new republic. It's what happens in France. When in France,
you know, it's good. We could learn a lot from them.
I don't think that any of the Europeans have either the desire to make a UFO or. So like they would keep that secret. Like if the Danish like created a UFO, they'd be like, "Holy shit, we created a UFO!" And they would tell everyone.
They would be so high on fucking random forest mushrooms. They would just blurt it out.
Yeah, and as I say, it's not the UK because they put beans on toast. So that automatically disqualifies them.
I mean, I could see it being Russia.
It could be Russia. But here's my thing is, like, most modern military tech in Russia, China, and North Korea is just stolen U.S. tech. Now, it could be a rogue Japanese scientist.
Oh, there we go. Now we're talking. On an island.
Yeah, like something like out of like Evangelion or even early Godzilla, where the guy has an eye patch so that you know he's dangerous.
Yes, also true.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you about that when I was teaching that class and showed him Godzilla?
I'm very much digging the idea of the rogue scientist.
The rogue scientist doing it.
Yeah, I like that one.
I taught that class and they were watching Godzilla and they were like, "Why does that guy have an eye patch?" And I was like, "Well, it's old school like symbolism that a person's dangerous." And they go, "Is that why so many people in anime have eye patches?" I went, "Yeah, pretty much."
It's sort of like that, yes.
So yeah, so we'll have to get back to our conversation on unidentified aerial vehicles soon. Is there anything else convention wise or news wise
that you can not really, man.
Nah, not, yeah, there's actually a lot of good news coming out of Gen Con this week. I know that they've already they're previewing a lot of it. So it'll probably the next cast that we have will probably have more of that information, but there's a lot of the stuff that they're already putting out is fairly interesting. Oh, one thing too is I wanted to talk about another GW blunder. It's not a GW blunder. I think it was just part of the whole farce that is the Indominus box set.
Yes.
So GW, the whole thing went, Games Workshop puts Indominus out for sale. The web store sells out, right? So people panic immediately and just assume that it's...
Immediately start scalping.
And there was a lot of scalping, too, going on. So the Games Workshop makes it print-to-own, right? But the second they actually release the box set, the day the box set is released out into the wild, I honestly, for about a week afterwards, just saw people going like, "Hey, we still have some Indominus boxes over at my local game store if anybody's interested." And it's just, I think it was just like they sold out online, which caused a lot of people to panic. Which is where I think a lot of it came from. Like, if they just went to their local game store, they could have picked one up. So Steve's mic failed, and so I'm going to call it right here. You go to the Game Classy Facebook page, the best way to get in contact with us. You could also check out my minis over on Instagram. I'm Game Classy Joe, and you could hang out with Steve over on Twitter at @command_throw. Best way you can help out the podcast, like, comment, and subscribe on the iTunes. hold on a second. Steve's texting me. Okay. You take like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes. You can also like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTube channel. So text of Steve, until next time, butt lords.
Game classy.